inside at last.
Welcome, fellow Taffers, to the one and only thief-dedicated podcast, Inside at Last. My name is Alex, and I have my beautiful Taffer buddies here, the Nex and the Soth. So, hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello. Hey, hello, Alex. And hello,
hi.
Listeners.
How are you?
Oh, excellent. Very excited to be here. And
I'm really relaxed with my cider right next to me. Nice chilled cider, so I'm good.
Yeah, I have a Burek brew, which is also very good.
And I have a pristine German beer without any ice cubes in.
Yeah, so you're a liar. The first thing you say in this podcast is a lie.
Well, it's in the theme.
But you know what? Terrible secrets. Terrible secrets.
They truly are.
No. Welcome. And thanks for listening already, whoever you are. We thought of like what could be a good start for the first episode so that you just get an idea of how these things will start. And we thought like, no, we don't talk about like, oh, let's talk about Thief 1 and then Thief 2 and then Thief 3 and whatsoever. We thought like, let's talk about Thief 2, the first mission, and let's see where we're getting with this.
Oh, yeah. Running interference. What a mission. Right?
So, yeah, of course. It's like always like when a Thief game starts, I think the beginning is always like the most exciting thing.
Oh, yeah. I think I do have the cutscenes because you can find the full cutscenes videos on YouTube. Yeah. I have it in the background a lot of the times. Probably mostly when I'm creating the missions because it immediately puts me in the right frame of mind and it's just so atmospheric. Especially the beginning, I do enjoy it.
Yeah, it's that picture of Basso and Genevieve like where they're standing next to each other and holding hands. It's like, you know, an iconic picture that's in my brain.
Yeah, and it kind of gives you it sort of tells you how the whole thing is going to be. It kind of gives you an idea of Garrett's character and how his storyline is gonna develop. I think he says, "I always found, was it emotions? No, it wasn't emotions."
No.
Personal connections to interfere with him and his money, something like that.
Yeah, right. Like that.
I always felt caught. Didn't he say that?
No, I don't think he did. The running interference is a great opening mission for Thief 2, I think. It's very well designed. It's not too big, not too small. Well thought out. And it was just really fun to play.
It's a perfect start, and compared like to the first one, which we will come to later, this is like, you know, imagine you're like, I was 13 when I started the game. You know, the first game I played with 11, and it was too hard for me. You know, okay, the training, the keeper's training was okay, but the first mission was like really overwhelming. And then I started Thief 2, and I was afraid, like, oh, hopefully it won't be that hard at the beginning. And they just lead you through this mission. And they give you like the option, like, okay, you have that one goal, free the way for Basso, mm-hmm. and then you can go back. That's okay, you know. So you did what you was what they asked for, or if you're like brave enough, or you feel like good enough, then you can like explore the whole upper level. You know?
Yeah, there's that difference between the. The difficulty levels, right? I remember when I first played it, I played other games and I thought I was a good gamer. So I actually never played anything but expert, at least in the early stages of the game. And expert actually requires you to get, I think it's 800 or 850 loot in total. And it has to be 200 in gems. And yeah. It turns out that to get the gems, you need to get both of the top floors. Right.
But if you know, but I was just like, that was the idea I was coming from. Like, you are pretty new to this. And, you know, from that point of view, you would normally go on the normal thing. So I think, you know, just from that point of view, like imagining you're like a little kid or whatsoever, you play first time Thief and you get introduced to that. I think that's a good way. And then if you feel like comfortable, you can raise the difficulty level and then you get like more things to do and you need to do, you know, that's your choice, you know, in Thief 1, Mission 1, you didn't have a choice, I think. You needed to go through the whole area, and it was really difficult
I think so.
At that time. And here you get the option, you know. So you get, like, from the beginning, you can have pretty easily have, like, a feeling of success.
Yeah. I was actually surprised that just because I was that you get more sound cues from Garrett and a lot more hints if you play on easy mode. Or normal, that would be normal. And it pretty much guides you. I think Garrett even says, when you come to the edge where there's the light and the two guards looking through the window.
Look at that light around the corner.
Indeed, indeed. And it tells you what to do. When you step a little bit further, it tells you, well, there's another guard there. Yeah. And if you play on normal, the door that... the Genevieve is behind is pretty much, there would be only a couple of things that you have to figure out. I played this mission the other day and I found out that on normal difficulty, there isn't a patrolling servant in the kitchen even.
No.
Yeah. So there's only that stationary guy next to the table, which would see you if you would not go through the kitchen. And it's a nice little, I would think that a lot of us that was started to play this mission or this game didn't have previous, well, then of course a lot of people played Gold before, but a lot of us didn't play any sneaky missions. This was one of the first, I think. And, well, you were accustomed to running through the map and there was your first punishment, right? In that case, where the guard that you find just before the Genevieve's door, he would find you, and then that would be the first reload that you have to do, and it would like put you in your place. You know, you're supposed to sneak around and not run around. You should be careful. You know, plan out, look behind corners and stuff. That was nice.
It teaches you.
But
South, how did you feel the mission? How was the experience for you back in the days?
Excellent playing that. But then again, I'd played Thief 1, so I had much greater experience. So I was very much more careful going through the mission. I didn't have the problem of accidentally running past that guard. I actually went through the kitchen the first time.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I thought the mission was fantastically laid out. Very good. Wasn't too hard, wasn't too easy either. I've got to say, it wasn't particularly easy because I always played it on expert myself, I suppose.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But I think there's a difference. You're like, you're some years older than us. So, you know, like you were already like an adult, right?
Yeah. I mean, Thief 2, what was that, 2001?
I think, right?
Should be somewhere there, yeah.
No, it should. No, wait. The anniversary contest is ending next year, so it must be 2000. I think Thief 1 came out at 98.
Oh, yeah.
Thief 2, 2000.
Yeah,
right?
I would have been 20 years old by the time Thief 2 came around.
Yeah.
I was 18 when Thief 1, Dark Project, came out. And
yeah.
That was just out of this world, Thief Dark Project. When I bought that. I was never expecting that game to be like that. I didn't even go out with the intention of buying it. It was just there.
Yeah, I played the demo, the first, you know, and I was 11, you know, and you could imagine how scared I was. And I took the Baffert's Manor, that was the demo. I think I took like 3 hours, like from the save file, which said like 3 hours or something.
Oh, so it should be even longer. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I played it for days because I needed a break. It was so overwhelming. And then, bought Thief 2. Because I was a huge fan of it, and I played the demo for Thief 2 already. It was like the party time mission. I was like, whoa, finally it starts like in a nice way. You know, why can't we have nice things? And, you know, of course it was still, I was 13 then when Thief 2 came out, and it was still really scary. And the immersion, you will never get that back. You know, no matter how great a mission is designed today from the authors, you are adult and you are not so much sucked into this.
But
you didn't have like, I didn't understand, you know, all the mechanics, you know, I didn't know like, okay, how gods work and how easy they are to avoid, or, you know, that they aren't actually that alerted, you know, you can like stand next to them, you know, if you don't trust their front view.
We were speaking, Alex and I, yesterday, and we were discussing the demo because I didn't play Thief Gold. I started with Thief 2 demo, which would be the Life of the Party demo, which is quite different than the actual Life of the Party that was included.
Later it was the same with Baffert's Manor as well. The demo was a bit different from the original, from the full version mission, yeah.
I see. And in that game, I would go on a couple of runs, and I would eventually discover what the game was about. I started up killing the guards, and I would run out of arrows and eventually life, right? And then it would be like, after a month of playing, that I would realize that, wait, if I hide in this corner, I can actually remain unseen. And then there would be the water arrows, and I would, okay, I see. I that makes sense. I can put out torches. It does seem right now that I was a little bit dumb when I was playing this, but I was quite young at the time, and it was a new concept. So, but I'll tell you, I can still remember the layout of that mission, and it's still. I think that whole thing drew me into.
I think the mission 10 kept me busy for weeks.
Oh yes,
and I didn't get to the finish. You know. I remember it over and over again.
And then you uninstall it after some time.
No.
In 3 months. I did. And after three months, I wouldn't. And I remember that like it took quite a long while when I realized, oh my God, there's a whole tower at the end, right?
Yeah, right. That was just like the first level, you know, of the level.
Yeah. It was a bit scary because this was the demo. And I thought, what will happen in the real game?
Yeah. That actually, and that of course, you know, I already knew how Thief works and what it's about, but you know, I never got far in Thief 1 because I was scared in the second mission. It was like with the zombies and, you know, the mines, and I couldn't do it with 11. So then Thief 2 was like totally different. And back to mission 1, what I liked, that and that was something I really loved about Thief 2, that the whole looks of the world was more friendly. You know, they used like more wooden structures, you know, and not just like on the balcony or something. It was more wooden on the walls and on the ceilings, and everything was designed more nicely to get the impression of the Metal Age theme. You know, it was more modern.
Oh yes, more.
And I liked it from the menu screen on, you know, which was like basically the same, but they put in front of the scenario, they put a, you know, and it was quieter and nicer and more inviting.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah,
and that's what this mission is all about. Like the house, you know, it's not so big. You know, is it Rumford's Manor?
Yeah, it is. It is. Lady Rumford keeping Genevieve locked up.
So, and it was small. It was like you could the layout was easy to remember because it was like just like in like a U, you know, like just half round circle. Yeah. And you know, this was way more, as I said, more inviting to the players. And I think they did that on purpose because they knew that the first game was like really hardcore and was not as successful as they wanted to be.
No, and of course it was suffering from more technical restrictions with the first game. Not a lot more, but more. And the lack of more decals, more models in the game, more clutter, you know, it would make one hallway much more similar to the other. compared with much more maze-like construction of the levels, it was a little bit tedious sometimes. And it's a good thing that you said that it was more inviting, because I was listening to Razorfist on YouTube, and he pointed out a good thing. It was that Thief brought this shift in gaming, where if you would play Doom, you would be afraid of the dark places. Whereas in Thief, the safest place you would be in a dark room, right? And I think this is much more prevalent in Thief 2, because in Thief 1, it's much, you see more zombies. The dark places are not as inviting, but with Thief 2, we would see nobles and servants, and you do feel empowered in the shadow, where in Thief 1, you would just feel a little bit less unsafe, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Actually, the zombie thing is like something to talk about in another episode, because that is something I love about Thief 2 as well. And I think that they listen to the fans there, because the fans were very happy with the game, Thief 1, but they felt like, you have this mid-aged steampunk setting. Why is there so much, non-natural stuff in there, It doesn't make fun. It was never realistic, I mean, with the Karras children and stuff. But, it felt more with less organic material, it felt more organic.
Yeah.
True.
You got to take Thief 1 storyline with a grain of salt, though, because there's a lot of zombies, because that's the way the story's being untold, as it were.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It fits with the story sort of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mind the zombies in the first one, because, I'm not bothered by that. And the Thief 1 being a little bit more difficult in places, I preferred.
Yes.
It's like, I don't mind it, because it's a challenge. It's a challenge to be defeated, which is, I'm happy to do.
It is. It is. Especially the second mission. I always found...
The prison mission was really
Craig's
kind of
left,
cool.
Right?
Yeah, Craig's left was really good.
I hated that, because I was afraid of that. And for a second mission, this was like, no. And I stopped playing the game. And I was so sad.
I found the third mission, the one where you try to find the Horn of Quintus in the...
Yeah,
in the crypts, I found that one much, scary and uninviting and cryptic.
Yeah,
and
but they started with that, and in the mines in the second mission, there was already the zombie, like if you took a wrong path,
there
was a zombie, and it was like, whoa. And then the next one, I as a child, I think I'm happy today in hindsight that I didn't get there.
I see. even Berks a little bit off-putting with their weird screams. It's quite. I mean, I found it. I was playing it later on. I was already playing fan missions in Thief 2 when I tried my best in Thief Gold, and I found the Crypts mission like a test of patience. Because you would not go around knocking out zombies. Can you even knock out zombies? I don't even know if I tried.
I don't think you can.
Yeah. So if you would go, you could kill them. But
with a sword. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't.
Kill them with a sword. I don't think zombies get back up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Actually, this is a thing. Like half dead thing. What is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was. In way more annoying.
Yeah,
but you could kill them with a flash bomb. I think that would take effect.
Yeah, two flash bombs,
fire arrows, of course, mines, and if like explosives and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But that would help. Like, and then
with
then
light,
this lay around.
Yeah,
that was scary as well, because the sound of the body parts when you drop them again, they make like a.
Splashy
noise.
So moist.
Yeah, squishy noise, and that's what it's called.
Yeah. And as a child, and then when you had like the zombie head, like and was turning around, in the hut, it was like, whoa. But
the second mission, though, you got again the zombies there fits well with the story, with the mission, with the story sort of thing. because you're having to go in from the bottom, working your way up.
But
oh yeah, abandoned mine and all.
But what I think is, like, when you look at like Thief 1 and 2, Mission 1 and 2 compared to each other, it's like Thief has a way better learning curve. Because it gives you the first mission, it's like I said, like you don't have to do everything. You know, there's a lot more you can explore if you want to, if you put the right difficulty level. Thief 2? Thief 2, yes, sorry. And then the next one, the harbor, you're like, you have this huge playground, and you know, of there you have to, no matter which difficulty level you're playing on, there you have to get a specific amount of money. Not that much, but of course it's spread all over the place. And you need to find ways to get there. And you learn so much by doing it. Not because like a keeper training tells you. You learn that, like how to use things. Oh, there are so many stacked boxes. And if I climb up there, I find little secret stash behind that. And then there are doors that are not openable from the outside. But how do I get in there? And so on. And it took you by the hand, but still let you do things freely, you know?
Yeah.
And you learned. And when you then got to mission 3, you already felt comfortable with your tools and the way the game plays. And then...
Correct.
Thief 1, of course, it had the keeper's training, but this was like, let's be honest, there was no pressure. So, you know, everything you did, you just did it because it was asked of you. But it was not like learning by doing it, really. It was just like, yeah, I will never have a shadow that dark in that path, you know, like just walk through a room and he won't see me. And then you start like mission 1, the big building, like, and you have to get through the end.
And it's the first time it introduces the large scale mission to you. And
right.
It's not under a lot of pressure of objectives, and
but it's like overwhelming, you know.
And, it is for the first time, yeah.
And then the second, like, whoop, you know, here's a nice Baffert building, next mission, dark mines, maybe a zombie if you go to the wrong place, hammerites, loud machines, elevators, boom, 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 boom. You know, it's and that's not a good thing. And I think that maybe many players were like, were jumping off the train at that point. And they maybe never came back.
That's true. Because I would agree that in the first two missions in Thief 2 do prepare you in such a way, because you can tell by the narrative that when you come to mission 3, it's like, now it's serious, right?
Right.
Now you're gonna infiltrate the police station and frame somebody who... Sorry, am I missing this? Am I messing this up? Is the third one the city mission? I'll check immediately.
No, the third one is the police station.
Yeah, framed. Yeah, it is. And... Yeah. It's the first time, you know, and also it did feel when I was first playing it, it did feel when I started mission 3, I felt like I was ready. Now I'm a thief. Now I know how the mechanics work, and I can do this, even if it's a police station.
Because like in the first game, you got a little thing to do. The next mission, like, really give you everything, but to explore on your own. And then it was like, okay, now it's serious. Just knock out like 5 guards on normal difficulty, which I hated at that time, but it's okay. And then it's like, you know, suddenly, you know, the police station was like more, it was like felt smaller and tighter, you know?
Yeah.
There wasn't so much room to hide. But there were so many great secrets, and there were mysteries to that. Especially like in the cellar where you come through. Ah, that's one thing we will spoil in this this podcast.
Try to spoil too much.
No, but I think, you know, it's like if you want to talk about game missions in particular, then you have to say what's going on in there. So, you know, there, you know, you come through the secret passage after the sewers.
Yeah.
And then you put down the wall. If you go the right way, there was, of course, 2 ways. And I always went to the right way where you came to the prison part.
Yes.
And then there was the torturing devices. Then there was the door you couldn't open at first, you know, where you just heard the conversation or someone, the hammerites person, I think, killing someone. And it was so like, oh, what's going on here, you know?
But I'm a veteran. I think he said that. I think there's a more
yeah right right so. right
There's a morgue also where he says he won't be needing that anymore.
That's one of the famous quotes.
Yeah,
you won't need that anymore.
And tell me, there's a guy. If you go through the actual prison section, you pass through the place where they have the interrogation. There would be this guy that would be that's a maniac. He's talking nonsense. And Garrett says, "Huh, I know that guy.
I know who this guy is." He says,
"Yeah, that's right." And wait, I never knew. Who is that guy?
Also, the good thing about the third mission is you get the lady turning up asking where our servants got to.
Oh, right, yeah.
That was amazing.
Lady Rumford.
That is great, because that's a great... How do I put that?
Yeah. It's like
the missions are connected. You know, you're playing a real-life story sort of thing.
That's what they always do. The whole narration, the narrative of that, of the Thief game. And I think that's only Thief did that in this way that at that time. Like, they did it within missions. Sometimes the missions refer each other.
They do, yes.
You know, and that's so great in a way, like, just by passing by. You know, they don't put it in your face. You know, you have to find letters. You have to overhear this conversation.
I like that it's not a cutscene.
Of course not. And that's so great. You know, Thief had amazing cutscenes, but that's another topic. but that the narrative inside the missions, you know, it's like, you know, there are characters. You don't connect to them normally. But Benny, you know, is like someone you connect to. And there are so many funny things. The guards are actually clowns, you know.
Yes, they are
conversations to overhear. And even if we played so many fan missions and we heard those conversations 1,000 times, but it's still not boring.
That was a mastery in itself, because I heard a lot of criticisms over a few games that were made in modern times, and I think one of them was one of the newer Wolfenstein games, where the guards would say, "Get him, he's a spy," and the player that played this and made a review heard it over and over and over again, and it felt... It kind of broke his immersion in a game where there even wasn't a lot of immersion. And
but
I'm surprised.
No, that's wrong. Because the new Wolfenstein games are the first games that reminded me on that topic we were just talking about, it, that reminded me of Thief, because the conversations between guards, and you read the letters and you get such a big narrative on this whole war setting, and that you are actually killing people with families.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
They totally did that right. Of course, I can understand if it's always that one sentence you hear over and over again. It can be annoying.
I never felt annoyed in Thief. I heard it a lot. But it wasn't. It wasn't. It wasn't. It didn't feel like
repetitive.
That's right.
It was. Yeah. It's like coming home and like hearing like familiar voices. No one pushes Benny around.
You know, it's go back to the Thief 1 and Thief 2. I think by Thief 2, though, you've got to think the company and designers have matured. And obviously learn a lot more about, you know, designing the game, designing the missions, and can work better with the tools. So Thief 2, in a lot of ways, was going to be perhaps easier for newcomers.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes.
But I think that's normal. If they use the same engine, like for the second game, they always are more confident with creating and working with the engine and stuff.
Yeah. So also, it's a fact that... The first Thief was through the majority of development, it was intended to be a different game, and it was later on turned into a stealth game. So I suppose
it started as Camelot.
The
original idea. I think they showed a trailer on the E3 1995 or something, and it totally looked totally. Oh my god! Yeah, you have to YouTube it later. There's a Camelot trailer.
I will.
it was like, well, the graphics looked so awful, but it was like set in like a medieval magic setting, like the Camelot brings with it.
So like something like Hexen?
Yeah, no, but it was supposed to be like a 3D sword fighting game.
Oh, I see.
Like in the keeper training in the first game, the fighting element with the guard at the, you know, that they do there after the dummy, mm-hmm. where the real guard comes out, that is like I think some leftover from the original intention of the game, as far as I know. Maybe I'm totally it's totally bullshit what I'm saying, but that's like the information I read about years ago.
Yeah, same here. I well, maybe this explains, because I was always amazed in a stealth game. It always felt that the sword play was a little bit overdeveloped. Even, I mean, in the light that it was pretty much useless. I know there's a few people that play the levels by killing everything and they enjoy it. And but
you.
No, I in the folly of youth, yeah, that's what I did. But I think there was the second mission in Kalandra's Legacy. There was a guy that I think successfully killed everything in the mission, and I think there was a monster that was, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was designed to be undefeatable or very strong, but he somehow managed to kill it. I read a post long about it, so that's what I'm saying. There's a few people that play it that way, but you know, in what other stealth
sounds
game?
Like fun,
Yeah, that's all well and fun and good, but that's not really what Thief is about or how it's meant to be played, right, in my eyes. But that's not the challenge, I mean, is it?
Yeah, but the
you that's know, ironic, that by the way, that was not
Doom
true.
Right? Thief, and it's like, well, it's not Doom. That's why I play Thief.
Correct.
Yes, yeah. But I think you can sometimes, like, you know, it's like the same, like the Supreme Ghost is too, like what you told yesterday with like carrying boxes through the level to get up on surfaces you're not supposed to. So you can mess around with the game. I think that's okay. You know, you like in the other way, like saying, okay, now I want to play it. Like let's break the rules and do it differently. You know, like just for fun. I think that's
I would even say it's more than okay. I think it's perfect, and it kind of makes the world even bigger, because there's, I mean, it creates like different styles of play, and that's why we can talk about this, and somebody enjoys that mission but I don't, and then somebody hates the mission that I love because he plays a little bit differently, and it feels like the modern games where you can pick a class and you can be a warrior or a priest or anything you can pick. I'm not saying this is equal, but in a way, you know, the players were given the same starting point, but they took their own path without like choosing.
Thief gives you like a freedom.
Yes.
But this freedom is like very well thought through, you know, like there's like nothing happens for no reason.
Yeah.
I think that's it. But I think we are already off topic again.
Correct. Should we return to the running interference?
I don't know.
A little bit about it.
But you know, I have one question. Can you, or how do you Supreme Ghost the first mission?
Okay, this is what I wanted to speak about, because let me first ask you this. Both of you, which mission? We all I think agreed that from a new player's perspective, the running interference would be superior in helping your learning curve than Baffert's Manor would be. But looking back now, when you have a lot of experience with playing Thief, which mission would you play right now if you could pick one?
Baffert's Manor.
I don't know. I like both.
I do like both. Actually, no. I don't like the running interference because of my rules. And the Baffert's Manor has a few problems of its own. I always hate it that you don't have the rope arrow in Baffert's Manor. maybe
every
I'm wrong.
Mission without a rope arrow is like it's one gray down.
Yeah, and because there's a secret way of entering the throne room, and you can enter from the I think it's the garden, and
yeah, with a secret passage.
Yeah, and you can drop down from the rafters, and I always thought what a great idea, but I could never get back up, and it broke my heart. I had to go through the hallways to get back.
But wait, but, a normal setting, you have a rope arrow. I think I had one.
Really?
Yeah.
You
come in that through that secret passage, and then you see the room from above with the crossed wood, and then there's a guard down there facing the entrance, right?
Yes.
Well, I think he's turning, like, you know. In
different he does turn. He yeah. turns different directions, yeah.
I think he has two or three directions that he turns. He never turns towards the throne.
You can still ghost that with a moss arrow and water arrows and just walk up
right.
to the...
Yeah. But okay, let me continue. So I think that running interference is a good mission if for the learning curve. I looking back on it, because always when I think okay, I have a new strategy, I'm gonna try to do the original series as best as I can, you know, the my thief style. And I always had a problem with running interference because on expert difficulty, it gives you. You have to knock out 8 guards, which does not happen on normal difficulty. And here's the thing. The rules, the supreme rules state that if something is an objective, even if it would otherwise break the rules, it doesn't. So the 8 knockouts do not break the rules. I'm not sure. I'll check. But I think the first mission is supreme ghostable. I'm not sure, but I think you can do it. It's not perfect supreme ghostable because there's a piece of loot in the courtyard area, which you maybe I'm wrong actually now. Maybe you can get it, but I think you can
get it without alerting the guards. I do think.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Or so fully alert. I think he sort of. Senses that you're there, but he doesn't come chasing after you to hack you to bits.
So yeah, so in that case, it would be perfect ghostable, but it would not be perfect supreme ghostable because supreme ghosting does not allow you to take any alerts. So that how that works, and I never liked the 8 knockouts for that matter, but there are no good paths without knocking anybody through. Mission, but then again, if you want to let Basso take his damsel in distress, you will have to knock out just to make it safe.
That was my question. Yeah, that's why I was asking.
Yeah, so it is supreme ghostable on the actually I'll just go to shout out to Clotrimus, the supremest of supreme ghosters, at least in today's.
He makes Let's Plays or stream?
Yes, he makes Let's Plays, and he details his... It's clatremus.org, if anybody wants to go there. And we can see that... I was wrong. The running interference is perfectly supreme ghostable. So, Clatremus
so you were wasting minutes of our life to tell us
correct.
It's not.
terribly sorry.
I knew that this is a bad idea.
Thank God Alex does not have a blackjack in his hand right now.
Well, who knows?
Who knows? Thank God we are hundreds of kilometers away. But yeah, there was another issue that I had with this mission because let's say you play on expert difficulty, which I think there's, I would say this would be a good statistic to run. How many players play on expert and how many players play on lesser difficulties? Because I think more players play on expert. And
these days, yes.
Yeah. And if you consider yourself to be a good thief, right, you would sort of fan missions a lot of times rename and they rename expert to Garrett, right? So that would be the most Garrett way of playing it. And I always found, well, he
That's
does.
That's wrong. That's so wrong.
Yeah, I I would agree with that. Yes, that is. But then again, I do role play more than the regular ghoster. I don't mind the renamed ones, where you would not have normal hard or expert, but you would have three different styles. I'm not sure how the Supreme Ghosters work with that one. I still think they would pick the third one, which would be the expert. But think about this. Even though the Garrett says that if Basso messes this up, he's going to make sure that he's going to rot in Craig's Cleft again, because in Thief 1, we saved him, Craig's Cleft.
Right.
Which is a prison, if somebody doesn't know. But here's the thing.
I think everyone who knows it, because it's mentioned so often and all over the fan missions, like, you know, it's like the Arkham Asylum of the Thief universe, yes. You know?
Indeed. But here's the thing. I always felt that there was a connection, like a relationship between Garrett and Basso that did kind of cross the friendship bounds. Would you guys agree?
Yeah, you mean like a brother?
I wouldn't say brother, but Garrett would have a friend, I feel like this could be Basso.
I think that's one of the few things the newest Thief game did really great, I think, because they showed you the connection between Basso and Garrett.
The fourth.
The Thief from 2016, I think.
Okay.
2014, I think it was.
Was it 14 or? Yeah, right. It was 10 years after Thief Deadly.
I can't even remember much from Thief, the latest Thief, which I'm not upset about, to be honest.
Yeah, but they did that. So let's just say that. Garrett, you know, he comes home after that 1 year. He's not in the city. He was knocked out. He doesn't know his past whatsoever. Great story, blah, blah. And then there comes that little raven. And the raven is named Genevieve.
Really? Oh.
Yeah.
Good.
And
good.
Then, you know, so because the raven always brings like little matchboxes, not the cars, real matchboxes, to the window with little messages on it. And it's like over a year, like, Garrett, where are you? What is going on? And then Garrett visits Basso in the crippled Burrick. It's still the same. And, you know, Basso looks totally different. But you find out that he's divorced from Genevieve, or they're not together anymore whatsoever, but he named the raven after her.
I see.
So and you know, they you see that's the only good connection in the game, that they have a relationship that is way in the past.
I see. Maybe.
But I totally agree with your question you had. Like, yes, I always thought that as well, and it was through the fan missions, and that's something something I have to separate, because through the fan missions, of course, the lore of Thief was even, you know, it even evolved,
expanded.
Basso's about the only person in the Thief universe that you really called a friend, apart from a few select keepers.
Cutty, wasn't there Cutty?
Oh yeah.
I don't know. If
he was Cutty, a fan, but
was he really? Cutty die? Not like Basso. Yeah, Cutty died in the second mission of the first game. So
he was just like a colleague, right? You know, he has to work with him sometimes.
Business.
Yeah, he wasn't someone you'd call someone you'd call a true friend, like Basso is probably what Gavitt would call.
Yeah, that's true. And I think it's a good thing. That's maybe more inviting to the first Thief game, because like, You don't start as that loner, because you as the player get the feeling like, okay, this guy has some roots, you know, he has some people he can relate to.
Yeah.
And I think that's a clever way. I never thought of that, but now that we're talking about, like, I just realized this. This is amazing.
It is.
So well thought through.
So if Basso is really somehow connected friendly way to Garrett, and of course, just by helping them, this indicates something. Helping him to rescue his damsel in distress, and it's not a very lucrative, I suppose, heist, right?
Yeah.
I think I think if Basso wasn't Garrett's friend, Garrett wouldn't do this because Garrett does not help anybody.
He would probably charge him for it.
That's another psychological thing, because maybe as a experienced thief player, you think like, what is that small building? There's not much to be there.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, oh, that's really a step backwards, you know, for Garrett's standards.
Yeah.
That they are amazing. I just realized they are even more amazing. They put so much thought in things. Like, maybe they did. Maybe I'm just my interpretation of that. But I can imagine, because they did other great things. That were amazing and I've maybe never seen before.
I'm sure we're gonna stumble across a lot of such things. And if this is a consistency, then it definitely it could not be a coincidence, right?
Right.
Okay. Honest, so
Thief 1 and 2, as you're talking about Thief 1 and 2, I see Thief 1 and 2 as one whole game being split up across two boxes, as it were, not separate games almost.
Now, that's a very interesting way to put it, and I say yes and no.
For me, well, you both played the first one before the second one, right?
Yes. So I played it all the way through. Man, I played the first one from start to finish with no interruptions.
I see. Well, for me, right, you know how it is when you move from a lesser game to a better game, because in my mind the Thief one is slightly lesser. It has more. It shows a lot of potential, which was then done in Thief 2. I would say that it has moments that are lacking in Thief 2, but from my perspective, I mean, you could say just for the visual part, it is slightly more populated with models, object, and all that sort of stuff. As you said, it's more exciting. And once I played Thief 2, it was much harder to go to Thief 1 and love it than I think it was to go the opposite way.
Which is most times with a successor, you know, that, you know, when you start to play later.
That to me is a good thing, though, because it means shows you that the game is progressing and it's getting better and better and better.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, going from like, say, what's a good mission? Like Life of the Party or yeah. Let's say Blackout. And you go from that and you go into, what's that one called, where you go into Thief's Den, you go through the casino and then into... to rob the Thieves Guild. I think it's the Thieves Guild.
Yeah, it's okay. The Thieves Guild, yeah.
Yeah.
The Thieves Guild, yeah. That mission for me, I did like it, right? I liked the music. I liked it. I hated the music.
It was annoying because you couldn't hear the important sounds.
That's true. But in that, the most loud it was in the casino itself, and I felt like maybe they have a speaker. Right. Maybe this is not just atmospheric. Maybe this is a speaker, even though it was more action-packed, so it couldn't be really a casino music. I imagine casino music be more like loungy. Yeah. Either way, I found the mission extremely maze-like. Every corridor looked the same to me, and I was already, let's say, a semi-advanced ghoster, and I didn't want to knock out people, so... When I played through that mission, it consisted of a lot of standing in the corner with just one texture, waiting for the guard to pass by, and it took like 3 minutes, and then I would go through the next hallway and then wait again for the next guard.
Yeah,
and
that's hallway the thing, looked the same. Thief is all about orientation.
Oh,
because,
yes.
Like, it's not, that's another
that's
thing.
Thief like, Gold, like, I mean, I played Thief Dark Project, which didn't have that mission in there. And a couple of the others were missing, which personally I think that made a better flowing game than Thief Gold.
Oh, I would agree. I would agree. Though I think the Thief
no,
Guild
what,
is
what
a great
I wanted
mission,
to but... say is like those like missions like that, and especially like with the poor textures from Thief 1, and you know the lower object count and so ever. So there's not so much exciting stuff to see, and the whole geometry of the levels was more like Minecraft like.
Yeah, that the look of it doesn't really matter. It's all about atmosphere.
Thief
had great sound and great music, and that made up for the
thought. Because You know, like,
you've been carrying the conversation. It's my turn now.
You know, like, that's what I wanted to say. Like, it's orientation, but it's not just orientation through your eyes. It's orientation through your ears in Thief because of the sound. So if you don't, like, feel the geometry of the level, then it's hard to tell the sounds. Like, where does it come from? Where is the guard? Ah, oh, he might be there. You know, and that's, I think, the problem with the Thief's Den.
Good point.
So, and now you can, sorry for, but I started three times to start my thought, you know, so that's why I was just interrupting so much.
Well, I had a pretty good system back in the day, so I had the EAX good headset, and the sounds were fantastic, along with the music as well.
Compared to other games of that age, my brother was on a college program where he went into Netherlands to study at that school for half a year, and I'm very jealous that I didn't do that, because the teacher that taught him programming there, because he's a programmer, was a Thief fan, and he knew a lot. They actually he taught people by Thief examples. And then my brother spoke to me about them, and he explained me how they solved the audio issues, because you can do realistic calculations regarding sound, because there would be the reflections of sound. I'm not sure how you would say that correctly.
The echoes
and how it bounces off the walls, and there was a problem, and that was a very important part of the game. And if you ever were developing a mission, you would see that for the you make a geometry, which is the visible right. geometry, and then you would have to make another geometry above that, which would sort of make rooms, and those rooms would be there to make the calculations for the sound easier. So right. they developed an additional system to optimize it within the hardware restrictions, so that the sound in Thief was as it is. So there's a lot of background there, and there's a nice interview
on YouTube, pretty new actually, about that, where they interview, I think, the game director of the first game.
Oh yeah, I think I watched it. Yeah,
yeah, it was very interesting, and they were like almost done. They were like, oh, we can't do it, and then he came with the idea, I think, and which solved everything.
Yeah,
yeah. That the sound of the game is always like a thing, but going back to
we're sticking with the sound thing, because I play some modern games and I find the sound is seriously lacking.
Oh yes,
yes,
and it's not even a part.
The graphics may have got better, but your sound is awful. Sort of thing. They seem to have forgotten the importance of sound.
And imagine what they could do with modern technology, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And yet they seem incapable of creating good sound, even with modern technology. So it's like, well, you seem to be getting worse at making actual games and understanding atmosphere and all this kind of thing. It's all about loot right. boxes and stuff like that, and they seem to forget about everything else.
Do you guys know Dishonored?
Yes, of course.
Well, obviously, yeah, I've got 1 and 2 and all the add-ons and everything else.
Tell me if this is true. I've heard that Dishonored was inspired by Thief.
Yeah, there's even an Easter egg where in the first game where there is a Thief-like figure, and there is a sentence from the Keeper's Training said awesome. To him. Yeah,
awesome. But
what mission on Dishonored is that?
I don't know. It's like, it's in the first game. Maybe YouTube it. Like, I think there is a video to that. Like, Dishonored.
Yeah, cool. I can't remember that off the top of my head, but yeah. Well, the same guy does the voices.
I think I think it was like that. But it's like it's a mission with a YouTube.
Yeah, the Russell guy, Stephen Russell. He does the voice in Dishonored.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you guys would know.
But your question, sorry.
Yeah, you would know probably, Saf. I've heard reviews, and because we were talking about sound, I've heard that in Dishonored, they forgot footstep sounds.
I think they could be right. From the character, yes, I think so. Everyone else you could hear.
You can hear everyone else? Maybe
you can hear them walking, yes.
maybe it was patched. Maybe it was patched because I can definitely remember this from the reviews of the game.
No. You know what I think? I think when I remember right, I saw something about that. They forgot to that the sounds will be interrupted by walls.
Oh,
I think that it's something like that. That they forgot to do that, mm-hmm. like that the footsteps just, you know, go over distance and got quieter, but not, you know, like through a ceiling or something like that. When I'm right, I don't remember it really.
Yeah, I don't remember that. The only thing I remember bad about performance-wise from Sony was number two when it was first released. It was absolutely bloody awful.
Hmm.
And I had a really good system at the time, and it wouldn't run at all. Like,
so it was patched on later.
You're very
I think so, yes.
Okay.
And they try to explain it away as, you know, it's not a console port. It's like you're taking the mic, or it clearly is.
See, Thief didn't have this advantage back in the day. Once you print it on the disc, that's it.
Now, they had to patch 118.
Did they?
Yeah, of course. Oh. There was the Thief, and then you have the patch 1. Oh, no, it was for Thief 2, right? Yeah, the 118 patch was. But no, but both.
And for Thief 1.
Yeah, they had a 118 patch for Thief 1 as well.
Oh, sorry, I didn't.
But you had to get it on the like a magazine CD.
Oh, no. Yeah.
You know,
no
you
internet
couldn't,
for all.
There wasn't internet at that time for me. So,
but let me go back to where we started, which was we established now that Basso has like a friendly connection with Carrot. So
yes.
Imagine you help your friend. You know, to rescue his girl, which is, I believe, is she owned? Does Lady Rumpert, is she a slave or just a servant?
Yeah, but a servant.
It's like a gray line, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you wanted to help your friend, I always found that the normal way was better because it did not require you to take loot. Because if you really wanted to help your friend, then you would not take the loot, you know, because that would be an incentive to search for your friend and the Genevieve even more, right?
Yeah, just the things you find on the necessary path.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally true. And there we go to that is like, and that will be another episode's topic. Like,
no, that's Garrett all over. He's our opportunist. He sees the chance to earn more money, he's going to take
That's true. Yeah.
But not go on the second level. You know, like, and Besso's waiting there. What's taking this guy so long? And then he looks in the window and then he sees Garrett on the second floor, like, grabbing some jewels, you know?
Garrett comes back, right? And he, you know, and he's covered in jewelry.
Like, hey, I sent Garrett in there. Why is Mr. T coming out? Like...
So I think Basso is going to know that Garrett is an opportunist and will, you know, loot everything that's nailed down.
Yeah.
That's kind of his payment for doing it sort of thing.
Yeah, but still, I think, you know, like, as I said, like, maybe if he steals things, like, from the basement where he needs to go is the one thing. But, like, going upstairs and, like, spending time there, like double the time... yeah, I think it interferes with the thing, with the story or with the narrative. But
yeah,
that's
why not
always
the
case. What we had yesterday, like, okay, you say on one side, like, okay, Supreme Ghosting would be the more realistic way. But I say, like, going with the narrative the game already gives you, why shouldn't Garrett use the potions he has available, you know? So, like, it's always, like, something with the goals of the mission, with the different difficulties.
You've got to think, Genevieve is actually locked inside a room, so she's not going anywhere.
That's true. So that, like always, you will always find something where you can say, yeah, but this adds to my point of view. But yeah, if I, you know, there's always something that's not right, you know, like with the narrative. But that's okay, you know. I think the game does so many things right, like... Of course, you can always...
That's okay, because you're given the option for new players, if they choose to learn to explore more.
Right, that's what I said at the beginning. Like, you have the option, and that's great. And at the end, you always have to think, like, this game is from the 90s. So games at that time were gamey, way more gamey than today. And this game tried something like with a narrow story with a world, and it did that perfectly in this shit. It was an ugly engine already in 1998. You know, you had Half-Life at that time and Unreal 1 year later. You know, so
Unreal, I think, is it not that Doom Dead is based on Unreal? No, it's probably not. I don't know why I thought that.
No, what is based on Unreal?
So, because a lot of times you would have games that are based on their engines would be an extension of an already working engine. So you
System
have
Shock is based on the Dark Engine from Thief.
Half-Life is a Quake engine.
Correct. Yes. And there's Unreal Engine used all over, and I wouldn't be surprised if
I think at that time Unreal was only just as a game and an engine was only just starting out, as the ID guys have been around for a bit longer.
You're right.
But
Unreal, right.
What did they? I think they came out roughly the same time as what was it? Quake 2?
1999.
That was Unreal Tournament. Unreal 1 was, I think, a year or two before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was 1999 Unreal and then UT 2000.
Yeah, but in the Unreal Engine, to be honest, if I remember right, it actually took over as the engine to go to, sort of thing, and ID's engine started to fall to the wayside a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so Thief did something to tell, like, with it was ugly already at that time, but still so... you know, consuming your everything, you know, like how you felt and that the atmosphere with the sound, you know, what the graphics doesn't have, the sounds add to it, and the stories, the letters, the conversation.
Exactly.
And that is so done with. This is a piece of art, you know?
Correct.
And of course we are fanboys. Of course we say that, but I think, you know, when I look at my favorite
not at all, because Half-Life did the same thing. It's a very great way of telling the story.
Yeah, but still, you know, Thief is still considered by, like, my favorite PC magazine, for example, as one of the biggest steps in gaming history. You know, it did something that has never been done before on so many levels. The sound, the first-person stealth gaming.
Yeah, definitely, because everything before then was really just a Doom or slash Quake clone. There was really nothing else. It was, you're playing Quake or you're playing Quake.
And you're always killing someone, you know?
Yeah.
And here it's like the opposite. Like, the game totally turned things around. And after that, you know, it made things like Splinter Cell, Dishonored just possible.
It
demonstrated to everybody that we have great engines and there's more ways of using it than just Doom and Quake. More possibilities, and it really... It was a dark side of the moon of the gaming world, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, that's perfectly...
Because it showed, you know, the amount of sounds and what was possible with the equipment in front of you. Dark Side of the Moon showed that musically, and Thief showed that within the video gaming world.
Yeah, I think a good thing here was, at least for me, all of the games and this trend continues, was that it put you in the skin of a hero, right? Where you would save everything and you would kill thousands of aliens or enemies, and you know, it would be unrealistic in that case, and it always felt like much more than Thief, that if I couldn't play myself. Because if I had to go to war, I would probably go to Canada, right? You know?
Yeah.
But in Thief, yes, it does put you in a narrative of saving the world. But I didn't care that much. Everything felt much more realistic. I wasn't the guy but I didn't have to kill thousands.
He's a reluctant hero, basically.
Yeah.
You're an anti-hero.
And also the anti-hero of it, I also liked. You didn't always do the morally right thing, right?
No, but Garrett has a heart.
Yeah. But he's not. I mean, it gives the choice to the player. You actually doesn't give it, but you could just decide. Okay, this is a house of poor people, and they have a baby. I'm not gonna take this one copper, right?
But I always feel bad taking the dewdrop.
I never took the Jew drop. I don't understand what's the...
It's a running gag, I think.
Where did the Jew drop come into play? Did it come with original missions?
I don't think so. I remember it from Thief 2 when you had the Pagan mission.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think I saw that there first. But I mean, it just... I think... Well, listeners, correct us if we're wrong. But I think that it was just an item that appeared a lot in the fan missions, and it kind of grew from there, I suppose.
Right, that's right. But just saying, like when we're talking about that, how great they did. They back in the days were like object count and stuff. Creating them, you know, it was way more challenging. They just created, like, for the original game, and I think you're true, Soth, that it wasn't that mission you said. There's just that little puppy. No, what is it? A doll. Puppy is, like, that little doll. And it's just there for that mission, you know? Just to tell you a narrative, there's a little girl living there.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Or rather was.
Yeah, right. It's like the same. It's like, have you seen the Disney movie Mulan?
Yes.
And you remember the scene where they go to the destroyed village?
Remind me.
And she finds that little doll. So everyone knows, like, you know, children see just the doll, but every adult knows, like, oh, there were children killed. And this came around about the same time, actually, because I think Mulan is from 1999. So maybe it got Thief got inspired by that scene. I could imagine, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a good storytelling little detail either way.
Without being brutal, but it's like good horror. Good horror works in your head, not what you see.
Yes. Yes.
And that's it. And it also tells
you that... I do like the horror, so it's probably why I like Thief 1 so much.
But it also tells you, like, okay, the pagans that are considered like primitives, you know, by the social standards from the city, that they, you know, they take care for their children. They make them little dolls and stuff. You know, this is also something it tells you. It's those little things that's so amazing.
I always thought that we could do this within this podcast because there isn't a place yet where you could find or please show me if there is, where you could find the condensed story. Like, there would be like a lore page. And I was always interested, just like I asked before, who is that raving guy in the prison? Where do I know him from? And all these little points that I've missed and how it connects, because I still don't understand like the political structure. Like, who is above Truard? Is there a king? Or and I have so many questions about that, and to be quite honest,
I don't want to know, actually.
Oh, that's actually I want to know what the game gives. I don't necessarily want to know what they thought of, right? But everything that can be deductible from readables or story points, I would like to know. Though there's always that part where you want to kind of find them yourself, right?
Yes.
You're probably better off not knowing, because as soon as you find out who's in charge, you're going to go rob him.
So, you know, I think that's another thing. Like, what they do, you know, they put so much narrative in it. And
you
then
know, characters
they, and then they call then they call this the place where it takes place just the city.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. And it's okay. It's the city, it is, yeah. Right.
But which city?
It doesn't matter, and I think that it doesn't have a name is even better. Because
yeah, that's true.
Then it would tell you maybe in what area of the world it would take place.
Yeah, fill it out yourself.
You think about the narrative, this Thief 3 carries on with the same characters from Thief 2, if I remember rightly, as well. Some of the pagans, again, pop up are the same characters.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, yeah.
The Thistleades from Thief 2, Victoria's. Doing Thief 3 as well. You can actually read a couple of read me.
The keepers
as well. Yeah.
I don't know if Besso's mentioned.
Yes, it is. You save him.
In Thief 3?
Oh, 3. Sorry.
So now I liked the Deadly Shadows as a game.
Yeah, and then the story was best, in my opinion.
A lot of people bitched on mine, but they're like purists, which is like pathetic, to be honest. So I thought, well, you know, Well, yeah, that's even worse. That's, you know, in my mind, that game don't exist. It never happened.
We knew it before it came out. That's the thing.
But 3 was really, 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 was really, really good. I understand because obviously the industry was starting to change, and the fact that they went to PC / console didn't surprise me at all. Because there's some really good additions in 3.
Yeah,
but I think things like the wolf flatten, which is fantastic. Yeah, that's brilliant.
No rope arrows though.
Yeah,
so verticality suffers a bit.
And at the beginning, they had like split levels. Like every level was like two parts with a loading screen in between because they couldn't handle it with the engine. Okay, you know, it had all its flaws, but it was still a thief game that I would consider for the main. You know, it's like a trilogy for me.
Yeah.
And then there's like Thief the Reboot.
Yeah.
Which wasn't very good, especially they didn't. I don't want to go longer on this, but they didn't get the Thief formula. They didn't get what's good and what's not good.
Hey, yeah. All the Thief 3 didn't have rope arrows. You couldn't even jump up and down in Thief 4.
Really?
You can't just stand in the middle of the street and just go start jumping up and down on a spot. You can't do that.
But you had this little like hush, like this float. That's like I like this floating around thing. That was really cool for the from a gameplay perspective.
Swoop, you mean?
Yeah, right.
I've heard a lot of things. Razor Fist mentioned this. Another. He says that pretty much the swoop is broken because they kind of. Well, let's not go into AI because the AI of not. Really, where I would like it to be. Some people don't mind, but I don't find it fun. The swoop apparently broke everything. You just had to swoop everywhere, and you'd be fine.
But actually, I think it makes it. Of course, it was like overdoing it, but it made sense that someone like you know would hush around the corners, and you know, of course, what they did was like really like a superhero.
No. Did you ever miss that, you know, you have standing up and crouching, and there are a few games that allow you to lie on the ground and move even slower and pass, you know, if there's, because if, this is
a thing. Just imagine Garrick doing that.
No, but do you remember in Running Interference where you find, when you douse the first water arrow?
Yeah.
I found it annoying that if I crouched near that window, I could see the guards. Yes, I was in the perfect shadow, but realistically, I should be able to go even lower. You know what I mean?
You know, realistically, there's no water arrow.
Oh, you got me there. Well, actually, realistically, I wouldn't even need a water arrow.
Realistically? No, you know, we could go on with this.
No, it is the edge of the
realistically,
window.
Realistically, there would not be a
that would make the game way too easy, to be honest. And you sort of find yourself not using your tools so much or not needing them. It's, well, good thing about the tools, they help you interact with the map and the missions, as it were.
Well, thank God you weren't here yesterday laughing about. Because here's the thing about Supreme Ghosters. I wouldn't say I'm the Supreme Ghoster because I have a slightly different style. But in Supreme Ghost rules, the use of moss arrows is not allowed. The use of water arrows even is not allowed if it douses torches. Potions are frowned upon.
That's not Supreme Ghosting. That's just being anal about everything. It's pathetic, that is.
I love it. We're going to talk about this in some other episode in greater detail just because we talked about it.
You're taking away the interaction with the map.
Well, I think a lot of people
the entire
disagree.
Game, really, because it's like, well, these tools are designed, well, are used there for Garrett to help him get in and out unseen and unheard. That's what they're there for.
Well, but perhaps not unnoticed, because you have to realize this game is about immersion.
Do you use moss arrows as Supreme?
No, because they leave traces.
Okay, that was my question. That's why. Okay.
Can't you get rid of them with water arrows?
Maybe you can use them. Yeah.
If water arrows gets rid of blood, I know that much. I think they may even get rid of moss arrows. It's been a long time since I tried that.
Yeah, I think it doesn't, yeah.
Doesn't it grow when you put a water arrow on moss arrow? Because really? The moss is like growing with the water. I think there was some mission where it was, I think it was a fan mission. No?
Yeah, probably.
Possible. I don't know. I think it was explained maybe in a letter or something like, hey, I found out that blah, blah, blah. And then you try this and then it worked. I think.
But either way, I suggest that we talk about this Supreme Ghost because this is like an episode on itself. Because there's a big divide between you and I or Alex and I, because we have different styles.
So we can go back to topic, because we were now talking about Thief 3 and 4.
Yeah,
The first missions from those games, if you remember them.
I think I remember the mission from the third one.
Yeah, that was the inn.
Yeah, I remember that. That was quite a good mission. Easy to do.
Yeah, it was basic, and it did almost, it was like, I think it was like a compromise between like a keeper training from the first game and the first mission running interference from the second. It was
like that. I felt that it was
half-baked, right?
Yeah. I would prefer both of those previous options over this one, because this one was a forced training. And I was playing the game for, let's say, the third time, and I'd still have to go through that little thing, and
The narrative wasn't given, and the mission was totally streamlined. It was just like a tunnel.
Yeah, yeah,
right. So it doesn't, like in the keeper's training, of course there was the narrative. Of course, this was a parkour in particular.
And it's optional.
You know? That's great. And in Thief 2, you have like a bigger mission that is like put in through the narrative, and Thief 3 made like it was just one path.
I think you've got to understand, they were making this for the console audience as well, which, quite frankly, I don't think is as good at gaming as the PC people. They're called casuals.
Yes, of course. And they needed to introduce it to new players again.
Exactly. So they had to do it in a really easy, simple, almost hand-fed manner.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was okay. I think it was a compromise with what I could live with that.
Yeah.
There's a review on YouTube about Thief, and it was quite right that Thief didn't, one of the things that made Thief great is it didn't hand feed you everything like modern day games do. It literally holds your hand through the entire mission game, as it were, but Thief never did that.
Yeah,
I totally agree.
Yeah, you kind of use your brain and you use a bit of patience as well to, you know, complete it, especially on things like Expert.
Yeah.
That's right.
And
the beginning of Thief 4, do you remember that?
No, I think I actually deliberately deleted it from my brain.
I actually thought this was a good one. Of course, the beginning was pretty stupid. It was like with a girl, what was her name? Erin was her name, and that was stupid. But then after Garrett came back to the city, and then he had to go home, and he had to go through the city, and then on his way there he found like a jewelry store, and of course he robbed it because it was an opportunity, and that was teaching you the things pretty well. The introduction, the tutorial-like introduction, was totally stupid. So they did like two tutorials, you know. But of course, they had to try to get in the newer gamers, you know, that are not like they don't figure things out on their own. They want to get told, because they were the games, the newer games tell them like how to play. And they are used to that, so they had to do that with T4, which is sad. But I could understand where it comes from.
Why it sucked.
I think it was okay, but
it had a few redeeming points.
What they totally killed, Garrett was not Garrett, because like there is that one guy, and he, you know, Garrett is like suspicious, but just for a minute. And then he's like, yeah, okay, let's go with it, you know. And this guy frames him later, you know. So it's not, they didn't get it. There was no Hammerites mentioned. There were no, you know, nothing of the past seemed to be happening.
Huh, not even.
Which is another thing that made it really, really pants. I don't even remember the pagans either.
Yeah.
No, nothing. Nothing of the what made the original games great. The lore. Exactly.
You know, I said three previous games, and you didn't get anything from any of those three games. Which is sorry, but that's
not even
that. To me, is lazy and can't be bothered.
Right, but that's the thing they did amazing in Thief 2. Like, they didn't change so much from the setting, but they were like, okay, Hammerites were like the, except for the like the monsters, Hammerites were like the strongest enemies, you know, like from human perspective. So, yeah. And then they must have thought, okay, how could we evolve this in a natural way? And of course, it's like a split group of this religion, like the mechanists, and they are more advanced. And they looked with their golden colors and stuff, they looked more like impressive. And that was totally genius way. You know, the guards were basically the same. From there, what they could do, but they had this technical advantages and stuff, and that was a really clever made way to mix advance the gameplay and put it in a logical story, you know, that made sense in the universe.
Well, with Thief 3, you obviously connected the previous two games with Hammerites and Pagans,
right? With a
the missions, actually, the city as well was good.
Yeah, it was still working great. You know, I think the engine was not the right choice.
I didn't mind that because it felt more like a true continuation, as it were.
Yeah, but I think the Unreal Engine it was. Unreal 2 engine. I think that, you know, it didn't have, of course, it was cheaper like to license an engine than to rebuild like Dark Engine 2. But I don't know, that's why there were some flaws that killed it a bit, because like things you were used to, you couldn't do. I think they would have done rope arrows, but I can imagine that it was maybe not possible.
Oh, no. I'm a programmer. I wouldn't say that I'm well versed in developing games, but I'll tell you this, that a lot of engine extensions that we've seen.
But think of, you know, they have time pressure, they have money pressure. The game wasn't successful, so it's not a big series where the publisher says, like, yeah, we give you half a year more. I think, you
true,
know.
True, but I mean, I would say that the Looking Glass worked on a smaller budget than the new one worked on. But it's just that you have to make priorities and you have to make decisions, right? Priorities would do a lot here. If you would not work on some aspect as much, I mean, they said that they took the new voice actor just because they could record his 3D movements and implant those in cinematics, I believe, or I mean, did you have to have this guy do all this crazy things for a game that's not even successful? I think their priorities were mixed up. I think if they focused on things that were more important and maybe made the graphics I felt were good, even though you had that cloud of fog around you would piss me off to no end. I felt like they could too. I mean, in the
what
past...
What are you talking about? Deadly Shadows is the latest one.
I'm talking about the one that we do not talk about, right?
Yeah, but we were talking about Thief 3.
Yeah, we were
talking about that. That was the Unreal Engine and so far. But if
they
want to connect...
Rope arrows have actually been created by the community, I believe, for Thief 3 to demonstrate that it could actually be done.
Yeah, that's right. When I said that, I was like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I know who that guy is. what is, I think, is funny, because like Iron Storm, they both worked on Deus Ex 2, which sucked, and Thief 3 was a good game. And then there was Thief 4, let's call it that, and Deus Ex Human Revolution. And they were both made by the same team. And this time it was the other way around, because Deus Ex Human Revolution was an amazing new game compared to Deus Ex 2. And I thought, like, oh man, if this team nailed Deus Ex, they will nail Thief. And they totally didn't. You know, it totally sucked. It was the other way around this time.
They had some of the original people working on Thief 3, which is why that was better.
Yeah.
They didn't have that on Thief, the new bag of
they
Thief.
They had, but they quit during development because the circumstance. I think I had an interview with the game designer of the game, and he was a young one, so he couldn't be from the original. And he seemed like a total asshole. And I could imagine, like, that the old guys that were working on Thief 4, and then there's that arrogant dude who he's a know-it-all, I think you say in English, right? And he wants to tell them how to make a Thief game, and they know better. Of course, they quit after a while. The sound designer was jumping off the project after some month.
Huh. Oh, yeah. I can understand why they're doing that. You know, you've got two, you know, iconic games behind you, and you've got some knob coming in and telling you this is how it should be done. It's like, well, we've got the fucking
your game.
We've got the fucking legacy status behind us already. You don't tell us anything. We tell you, and you go and do it.
Yeah, right. And they fucked up. But and I was so sad because Deus Ex gave me so much hope, because Deus Ex Human Revolution, I don't know if you have played that.
I think I played the first one of those sort of games.
From the newer ones or the original?
The newer ones, but I also played the very first Deus Ex, which is absolutely bloody outstanding game. It's one of the best games I've ever made.
Warren Spector.
That to me is up there with Thief almost. My top three games is Thief.
Yeah, it was made by the same dude, Warren Spector.
And Deus Ex.
Yeah, Baldur's Gate, okay.
Warren Spector was in charge for Thief 1. He came to the project later, but he did Ultima Underworld, for example. And mm-hmm. And then he was, like, I think, for System Shock, and then Deus Ex, the first one, the original game. So there's a connection between those games as well. So and they think they have things in common. And but it's so sad that the amazing team that did Deus Ex Human Revolution, which was actually put a classic game into modern game, they did a great job there, and then they couldn't do it with Thief, which is a shame.
To be honest, I think Thief needs a special kind of touch, which the originals, I think only the original people that made it will ever be able to do.
I think even they won't, because I think that a lot of the original charm comes from the really strange limited engine, because the gameplay is, like I said before, very gamey still, you know? And it's not like you don't see your body, you don't see your hands. So they don't need it to put this inside. So there's, you know, the way Garrett climbs is like total mechanical. You know, there's no natural way to it. So
we're talking about the first games.
Not the original, compared to like how they, you couldn't redo them, I think, with modern, with modern needs.
I think it could. I think it could. I think it has to do with the market wants and
how the
gaming industry evolved. I think that some of the things were restricted because of the technical restrictions, and
but they added to the gameplay actually.
Who?
The restrictions from the first game.
Yes.
To the final great gameplay we love.
I would say that some of the things that came from that were, let's say, coincidence, and came just because they couldn't do it otherwise in some other fashion.
Right.
But I would say that
something they had to do, they had to find workarounds with the engine, like that trap on the map. You pick the door, and obviously the wall starts closing behind you. And you've got to quickly unlock the. That's not actually a sliding wall. That's actually a lift going sideways.
Yeah, but I think that majority of the good things about Thief 2, at least, were not coincidences, but were well thought decisions that were just ignored by the industry as the gaming evolved.
It's a hard project, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, by that time as well, they're, you know, so like I said before, the skill of the developers has obviously grown and they've grown more confident, so they're able to do more, and the engine has matured a little bit more.
So,
so next, you had another topic to talk about. Tell us.
I had a couple of things I started to touch on the running interference, and one of them is that from the very start of the game, I feel something was done very good, and I feel like it's a lot of times missed in the fan missions. Of course, sometimes it's developed even further, but it's sometimes it goes unnoticed. And what I mean, what I'm talking about is the guard positioning. If you would look at the running interference, I found it, yes, it's an introduction mission and it's supposed to be a little bit easier, but I found it was very nice because the guards were positioned mainly outside, right? Inside, you didn't have that many guards because that would be logical, right?
You had and two guards outside.
I think you had, like, outside was very condensed. You had two guards right in front of the doors and then the one guard patrolling. There were a few guards actually inside. There were quite a few guards now that I think of it, but it didn't feel like it was overly packed. I feel like a lot of times when I play missions, I would get inside at last. I would get in there easier than I would then go around the manor, which is, I think even in one of one of the guards in one of the conversations says it, that you should put, you catch them before they get in or something.
That's the thief one, after you enter with the inside at last quote.
Yeah.
And then there are that was one of the guards you were mentioning at the beginning, like the one you...
Oh, the conversation.
Don't knock out, like you can't pass him, but it's unrealistic, blah, 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 in the Baffert's manner. You know, you were talking about those guys, and they were like, yeah, why put all the guards outside when the thief will be inside? And then the other one is saying, like, yeah, but because you want to catch them before they come in.
Yeah, I find that very nice.
You were mixing things up now because you were talking about running interference and then you were talking about many guards.
There's
outside.
There's two things there. Both those missions are quite similar. I mean, you get interaction with the guards almost immediately.
Yeah.
Which is great. Your sense of being in a real world and, you know, this is dangerous because the guards are like right there in front of me and I've got to try to avoid these people.
But I don't know what Nex is talking about. No, are you talking about the Baffert Manor mission? Or
no, they're running.
Thief 2, yeah. Mission 1.
Thief 2.
Because I think in that mission, the guards are posted in a very stupid way. Why is there a guard guarding the lift, the elevator for the meals? You know,
that's true.
Are there two guards in the cellar standing behind a non-shootable window? What are they watching? They are watching a brick wall in the dark, you know, in the cellar. And then there's what there are like.
Well, they're guarding the entrance to the from the kitchen because obviously that's a weak point in the matching design. So that's why they're there.
Also, that place is the guards' quarter. So
but why is there no guard on the side door where you enter? You know, there should be a guard. That would
correct.
Be
yeah.
Oh, the door's normally locked, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Isn't that the caretaker's area? Because it actually says that when you first go into that door.
The butler, yeah.
Yeah, the butler.
Luckily, the butler is out for the night.
For the night, right?
Yeah, so the butler would normally be there. So I'm guessing there would be an individual in that area to alert guards to any... Yeah, but he's still there to alert guards should you, you know, see a thief.
Or he's killed. Because he has no weapon. Yeah. You know, I think especially it's interesting that you next feel like it's so perfectly done. And I think like, no, especially in that
mission, I don't know about perfect, but it sort of fits well. So it's like, yeah.
And I don't think so. I think that's the main issue I have with that mission, actually, because the positions of the guards are like not really logical.
I would go back on that. But then again, Lady Rumford is keeping her locked up, so I suppose she wants to keep her protected. So a few guards near her would satisfy that. I would agree that the two guards in the guards' quarters are there just so that the player can, you know, has to douse the light. I would say that is a bit. I would prefer them if that was more like a living quarter, and they were just standing
there.
I think
it's to be done by design because it's making the players get used to the
exactly.
tools.
Yeah,
from yeah, but that's outset, gamey. That's not narrative.
It is gamey. Yeah,
you've got to mix the two together, otherwise it doesn't work. You got to use your lock picks to get inside the door, or the key, and you get the money on the side, and you're using the light straight away, and you're learning how to
then you could put a guard on this in front of the side door and put a torch there. You know, that could have that would have made more sense. Like if they want to teach you,
that's great. But you get that nice little banter between the guards downstairs behind the glass, which is kind of funny. I want things like that because it's funny when the guards banter with each other like that because it makes it more real and, you know, and it's just it brings the world alive a bit more.
Yeah, I would agree though now that I think about it that it is a bit gamey. But if you would take away that bottom part, which is it's gamey, it's there for purpose to introduce the player to the game, but if you would go into the upper levels, you would see less guards. You could now move freely around. If you would try to go outside, you would be faced with three guards guarding the front entrance. So that middle and top section, I thought it was well done because if you look at some other missions or like fan missions, you would have like one guard outside, and then inside, like every room, every hall would have at least one patrol going through it, and there would be, there would be much more of a presence inside than outside.
But I think like in Befford's Manor, it's done way better because there's one guard in front of where you jump into the sewers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That makes sense. And I think another one is guarding the streets. Then there's another one guarding the streets. Then there are like three guards or two in the main entrance.
It's a good design because it's
that's three a great design. Front, and that makes
one at
sense.
The back.
It's not as realistic because there's not a kitchen food. I'm kidding. But yeah, I would agree there that perhaps Befford Manor is designed a little better in that respect because in Befford's Manor the front
from the
entrance
perspective,
yeah, it is also heavily guarded in the front.
You got to actually see it from the game design perspective as well as narrative. You've got to try and balance the two when you're making the game. Otherwise, one's going to fall over and not be very good.
Of course,
but I think they balance it quite well throughout all the missions, to be honest.
That's totally true, but if Nex was just like saying like the running interference mission for an example for a great positioning of the guards, and I think that's the major flaw of the mission, you know. So that's like two total opposite opinions on that.
Yeah,
that's why
I agree. I take it back.
No, you don't have to take it back. It's your opinion. You can still think that, you know. But it's funny that I think the total other way around.
Yeah, you actually convinced me. It's not as perfect, but I suppose it didn't bother me as much.
I think when you go for maybe Thief 2, the third mission with the police station, I think there the guards are placed very well. Because the secret entrance, of course, that would be something if you would. No one knows about that, I think. So, of course, there are less guards down there because, like, of course, no one could come in there by a natural way, as everybody thinks. But, you know, if you would go through the main entrance, there would be guards on the front gate. Then there would be guards on the side of the second entrance door. And, you know, then there are guards patrolling the corridors and so on. And they make way more sense. So this is, in my opinion, a good example for good positioning of guards.
Say about guards, you get mission one, mission on Thief one, but you have to steal the sword, but you don't go past guards at all. You grow power up and go via the second floor straight away.
Yeah, the sword, but you have a logical position. You know, like where would I, if I would be the lord of the manor, where I wouldn't maybe think of a thief like having a rope arrow because I'm not into that. You know, I don't know how this works. So I would think of like, yes, of course, I would guard, first of all, the outside doors. And then maybe like the first floor, and the higher I get, and this or the lower with the sewer and the cellar, I would put less guards in there because, like, of course, from my point of view, from my lordship, I wouldn't think of the ways to enter that way.
That's true. But then again, you said that the framed mission is a better example. I feel like it's a little bit of a cheat there because it's a police station. It's like it's a big barracks, right? So yeah. You would expect guards pretty much everywhere. I would say that there are quite a lot of... There are three patrolling guards in the office area, which it seemed... Even though entrance
is... I think it depends maybe on the difficulty level as well. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, but the office areas, you mean like that open office, like where all the desks are?
No, the office where Hagen and...
Ah, the upper, the official, of the from the officials.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Oh, I loved that mission. Wow.
Yeah, oh, it's perfect. I'm surprised you love it. Didn't you miss the knocking out?
When I played the game... you know, in my younger years, of course I hated that. It was like, and now I'm into it. And now they restrict me on my favorite thing. Fuck you. But
I love it.
But actually, that was a clever choice because now I had to. And I learned more. You know, they forced me to learn something without saying me learn this, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's a clever choice. So, but to put it to a conclusion, I think I was always wondering, like in a fan mission, how much thought is put into the guard's positioning. And I think they put a lot of that because actually they are more experienced than the creators of the original games.
Yeah,
definitely. With the game, they know how guards work way better. They had so many situations. So I think that actually in many many missions, fan missions, there's so much thought put into that. I would
not
say.
Always. I would agree. Yes,
of course, not always. It's always always. But but in many missions, I think that the guards are posted in a very you know, of course you see the guards and you're like, oh yeah, I know how. What he's trying to avoid, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that, but maybe if you put too much thought into it and positioning them, then it seems unnatural again. Like in the first mission of Thief 2.
Yeah. I thought about guard positioning in my own mission, and I always thought, should I put in the prevent players from knocking out? Because I've placed a lot of
thought. I will never play that.
I want to avoid it. So, but it's another level because now I have to design the mission in such a way that I don't want it to make linear. I want to restrict player just because in this unlinear mission, I want him to experience at least in some way, you know, not completely, but in some way, the story has to flow. In a certain way, you can't just go from first part to last part and then get the middle parts. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you have to avoid that. And if you allow players to knock guards out, it's much harder to restrain the player from not entering a certain area. So I thought about maybe make like sort of let's say that. Some guards are mages, and those guards you cannot knock out, but most of them are just to find a compromise between that. But yeah, it's a good point. There's a lot of thought put into where the guards are patrolling, where the guards are standing. And I've seen missions where it's, as you said, has been overthought. And there has been, there were too many guards, so many patrols. It felt realistic that there would be big, big patrols. But in the end, I found myself reloading and loading a lot because everything was so unpredictable. And if I wanted to play risk-free, it would meant that I would have to, whenever I would go into another area, I would have to wait the amount of time that the maximum patrol would take, the time it would take to make the full circle of the guard of, with the longest patrol. Yeah. And here's another thing in, with big missions. This is not noticeable in running interference. I don't think it can even happen. But I'm not sure about this. When you have big missions, I think that the guards, I'm pretty sure this is happening in Thief Gold. When you have guards that are a certain distance away from you, their patrol would stop. So they would not make, even if the their patrol circle would come to you, they would stop and they would not make it because they were so far away. And when you, this was
for technical reasons, like
exactly,
mentioned, yeah.
And that meant that you couldn't even predict the, you could not fully predict things, right?
That is a question maybe to ask someone who really maybe knows more about that.
Yeah. Because I totally know
that sometimes I stood there and was like, isn't he supposed to be there by that time now?
Yeah.
And he doesn't. But, you know, but I always thought, and maybe it's the case. Soth, do you know more about this maybe?
I've not noticed that. Maybe I'll just, my memory's being as bad as it is, but I don't remember patrols suddenly not stop patrolling unless they get stuck on a doorway or a table and can't move.
Oh, yeah. That, and you notice that when you, like, okay, you listen to the footstep, and then it's like, it's still at the same point. And then you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
I don't recall that. I've never heard that before about the AI getting stuck because the path's too big or you're too far away or whatever. That's new.
Maybe I'm imagining this, but I'll try it again. I'm 95% certain that on Endless Rain, which is Skaki's...
Yeah, all amazing mission.
What a mission, indeed. What a mission. It's Skaki's... I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Skaki's mission, it takes... it's in Thief Gold. And I know that standing... Because his missions are very big. The rooftops and the bottom layer is just... wow.
Vast.
And I remember, as I said, 95%, because I might have drank... something. I've stood on the top of, well, one of the rooftops, and I was looking down, and the guard that should be patrolling the streets was standing still. And I don't mean he was standing still, but like
I recognized that as well. Yes, I think in Thief Gold it was maybe more the case. But like when we're talking about this. What I always find annoying and thrilling at the same time is like when you have a huge city mission.
Yeah.
And you, in my kind of playing style, I knock out everyone, of course, because I want to like explore the area like without any stress. And then there's like a guard, and I think they put them there on purpose, that has such a huge way to walk through the level that you didn't recognize him before, and then suddenly he comes, it's his way, you know, like crossing your area that you thought is peaceful. Yeah. And this is always like, wait, he wasn't there for like 20 minutes. What are you doing here right now? But it's a good way. Like, first of all, it puts like a narrative to it. Like, there's not just guards like walking 200 feet up and down. Like,
yeah.
You would go crazy. I couldn't be a bus driver because, like, you know, like 8 hours, like going the same lane, like, pfft, no.
Oh, yeah.
but that was this thought I had before. Like, maybe you play like things like, what is it? The city game, cities, It's like, I think it's called Cities, blah blah blah, and you can make bus routes. So you try to find the most logical way that most areas have like a bus stop and that the lines go like logical. And I think many authors of fan missions create maybe their paths of the guards as well. Like, okay, every area should be guarded, like in a, you know?
Yeah. They should. Well, sometimes it has great implications, because I would say that like there's this one mission by Ville, I don't know, W-I-L-L-E. And it's a series. W-I-L-L-E.
A Ville. That Ville. That sounds very German.
Yeah. He made a series called Mystic Gems.
Oh, yeah.
The second installment is Mystic Gems 2, Heart of Bonn. What a good mission, but I have a problem with that mission.
Of course.
It's completely logical and realistic that the captain of the guard would go randomly across the whole museum, right?
Yeah, and, I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, and because he has to keep an eye on his guards, right? But he had the key. He had one key that you had to get. Of course, it was his quarters. I'm not going to spoil why you need it, but you have to get it to complete the mission. And his path was random, and I think with him in particular is where I started to think that maybe Thief 2 also has that restriction where if the guard is far away from you, it would stop patrolling. Because I would wait in a spot where I have seen him previously, and I waited half an hour, if not more. I'm certain that it was half an hour.
I totally know that. I can't recall like how the mission looked, but I know this issue totally. I had the same thing.
And
do you reconsider that?
You talk about these broken paths, but I've never ever encountered that. The only time I've encountered broken paths is when the AI gets stuck on something and can't move. But sometimes it's usually able to correct itself and carry on. There's a few
what I can imagine.
It's really stuck, but the path nodes, which you put down in fan missions inside the editors, tend to be pretty good. Distance from it, stopping it from working, it just seems weird because your distance from them.
Here's the thing.
Should not affect them, as it were.
But I have a theory. Like maybe if he has like a random way to walk.
Yeah, maybe that's mathematically proven. Yeah.
Maybe he got stuck somewhere.
No, well, if it's random, he doesn't have to come to that area. It could be 3 hours before he actually comes, if it's random. Yeah, that's definitely
Or he got
true.
Stuck. You know, and so he was like walking into a door for half an hour and you were waiting for him half an hour.
No, I actually, after half an hour, I started to do the following. I would start running through the museum and try to find him, to see where he is.
Yeah, that's what I did as well.
When I would find him, I would then reload and then I would wait again. And then after another, let's say 10 minutes, he still wouldn't come. I would go again. And I always found him walking. You're right.
I did the same.
But here's the thing that why maybe not everybody felt this. Thing is, if you knock out guards, right, you would in certain state, you would have a couple of guards knocked out, right? You would have much more freedom of going around the museum. The museum is so vast, and there's a lot of guards inside at night, which is fascinating to me. I didn't like that, but I enjoyed sneaking around, and I could move from place to place very slowly. So the best solution for me was to wait at a place where where at least I could see a lot of area and then try to get him. But I couldn't. And there wasn't really, I couldn't go running around, free up a lot of space. Actually, there were a few places that I couldn't reach with my style. So that kind of made it's a perfect mission. I'm trying to solve it. I'm actually considering using mines to blow down his door, just for not waiting him, you know? But maybe
if you knock out many guards, maybe there are more resources for the engine.
Oh.
You know, that's maybe another theory that I don't know, yeah. But from a technical point of view, it might be logical.
No, it makes sense. I'm pretty sure things are, maybe not in this game, but it's done in other games. It's done whenever you have a service online that can take a lot of people, when you ever have like an editor online, there's this system where the server would expand and shorten, and it would accommodate for that. So once the guard is removed, it's not calculating those things anymore. So
but maybe, you know, this is maybe something we can maybe talk about with a, you know, like a really legendary mission creator. Maybe he can tell us more, or maybe there will be comments in the forum.
Yes, listeners,
and telling us that's a really interesting point. Actually, that's amazing. Good job.
I still think you should get a very experienced fan mission author on here, and someone who also knows about coding.
Yeah, give it some time.
Well, because that would be good, because they would know. We would be able to go into great detail.
Yeah, yeah, I already have like some guys who asked me for that. So we're on that. But I think, let's give it some time and we will come to that point. Next, you had another thing. You said you had two topics to talk about.
Yes.
This was the first one, positioning of guards.
Yeah. And the last one is, readables, but it's not. We already talked about it, how it's guiding us in the correct way. But there's this fun fact about this mission. Actually, there are two. I'll start with the one that probably a lot of people noticed, is that we are given this whistle, right? It's a bird call. No?
Yeah.
And it's supposed to signal Basso. And I always found it very, very silly that to actually get Basso to start his rescue, you had to be ridiculously close to him.
Yeah.
I tested it out, and if you're in the courtyard, I think that's why the whistle was made, so you can call it from there, you had to be, the courtyard is one big grassy circle, and within that circle is a marble road that goes around. So if we go towards the center, we first have a grass ring, then we have a marble ring, and then we have the grass in the middle. Yeah. So if we go from the mansion door and we try to whistle from the doors, it doesn't work. Then you jump on the marble road, whistle, it doesn't work. You go to the center, whistle, still doesn't work. You actually have to be, I think, on the last marble or actually off it, so you're pretty much close to the door to get it to work.
Yeah, at the fence, I mean.
Yeah, at the fence, yeah. I always...
bird call's a soft call, isn't it? So you have to be close for him to be able to physically hear it anyway.
But, you know, he's right, because, like, Garrett could be in that area and be like, psst, Basso, psst, yeah, you can go.
Yeah, you're so close to him, you could pretty much just poke him.
Yeah, right. Or throw a stone.
Well, yeah, again, it's, like you say, because it's supposed to be like an introductory level. It gives you something to interact with to get him to do stuff. So that was probably a design idea, which is good enough. You know, it's a good enough reason to do it again. Yeah, balancing narrative with gameplay and teaching newcomers how to do stuff.
Yeah, I definitely don't hate it. I love it, actually.
It's just a little detail, I think.
Yeah,
but I already thought that, like, when I bought the game with 13 years, you know, that, or was I 12? Wait, next year I get I was 13. Yeah. Yeah, but that's a very interesting thing. Back to you, Soth, to your ideas, like getting people on here to interview. Of course, that's like one of the major goals for us, like to get people into that. But I personally think, like, maybe we should like introduce the podcast first, like with 1, 2, 3 episodes, like, you know, people know what we're talking about, and then like a big legendary person, if they are interested in doing this, you know, maybe they get more of a spotlight, you know.
I think that's a good idea.
So but I love the idea, and today I had someone asked me, he's like playing with Speedrun Thief. He's streaming. I won't say the name now, but I think we will come to him very soon. So I think that is very, very interesting, because then we have like three play styles here. Like you two are ghosters. I'm like the caveman, and he's like speedrun. So he's like, I don't know, super caveman. And
most games, like from back in the day, are speedrunning, and even Doom has that.
Yeah. It's been very popularized.
It's totally interesting because, like, speedrunning is a totally new perspective on Thief that is totally not made for speedrunning, you know? Like,
It's made for slow running.
I'm really looking forward to that. I think that might be the first person we should invite, because he was, like, telling me, like, he would take part occasionally in this, and he was giving me good reasons why. And he's like, and he's also into he's known with Dromad or Dromed. What is it called? Is it Dromed or Dromad?
I only ever had to pronounce it to myself, and I would do it in Slovenian. So to me, it would be Dromad.
Yeah, because of the
ad.
It's like ad.
There you go.
But, and I say Dromad because it's like Drom Editor.
Unreal had Unreal Ed. So I think the ad is standing there for an editor. I'm wondering why Drum is there. It must be like a shortened version of something, or maybe it's initials of something. If somebody knows, please tell us.
Yeah. Or do you know, Soth?
I have no idea why it's called that. It sounds like weird name, to be honest.
There's very much mysteries. Mysteries that we will totally clear out all of the mysteries bit by bit here in this thing. It's like an investigational podcast.
We're legit detectives now.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that will be another topic, detective missions. But I think since we are like in for 2 hours now, I think this is a good thing to come to an end.
Correct. I agree.
We were going from from Thief 2 Mission 1. I think we always I'm actually very happy, and Soth, you did a great job in that, like always like trying to get back to that. it was a pleasure. So thanks for listening.
Actually, can I just interrupt you?
Final words you want to say?
I do. Which even I haven't tested out, and it's gonna maybe inspire listeners, or at least keep them mystical. Have you ever tried? We all know that Basso goes in and he rescues Genevieve, and then we run off and the mission is over. Did you know that when Basso when Genevieve runs out, Basso locks the door before it's closed, and then it's closing animation start. You can stop that closing animation and keep the door open.
Done that.
And
yeah, I've done that too.
It's inside. Well, maybe you're going to solve the mystery right now, or maybe you shouldn't, so that maybe listeners can go check it out themselves. But inside, there's a bed, of course, and there's a table. And on that table is a key. What does that key open?
Do you know that?
No.
No, that's new. I know there's a key in there, but I've never really thought about it.
Yeah. It would be very funny if the key inside opened the very door that we took Basso to open. But I'm not sure.
Why didn't you try that?
Well, that would be kind of a point in storytelling, because she can just walk out anytime she likes.
Yeah. But I'm wondering why that key is. I didn't try.
If she's a servant. That's probably a servant key to unlock other doors. But I don't think there's any door in there. There's no doors in there that can't be picked, I don't think. So no idea.
That's a good question. So, but no, there's one thing we need to do at every end of every episode, because like the idea is for the future episodes that we talk about a specific topic, thief related, and then we talk at the end about like one specific thief fan mission, so that we can give them some spotlight, or maybe they don't need it, but, or maybe we want to use their spotlight for us. So we should like say
if we're gonna do that, to be honest, I think this is the first, I'm thinking we can only think of maybe two authors we can really mention here.
Oh no, there are so many authors to mention.
There are, but there's two specific to this which we need.
So you're going for Yandros and
no, obviously not. I think two authors that need a mention is gotta be Nax, which is one of them. If you guys can name the other, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Oh, and? Sorry. We're mentioning authors.
Well, there's two. Nax and I think it's Lady Jo that need a bit of a mention because they've obviously passed away now.
Yeah.
And also, Seven Sisters is an amazing mission.
Oh my God.
So I think we should. You know what, Soth? You tell us the author and the mission, and we will play it until next podcast.
Lady Rowena, who made Seven Sisters, which is absolutely outstanding, and Nax, I can't remember the name of her mission off the top of my head.
So we go for Lady Rowena, whatever, for Seven Sisters. Let's play that before the next podcast.
No. Seven Sisters is a huge mission. Let's not go for the second one. I cannot play that much.
Of course you take like eight times that I do.
It's gonna be a long
things
while.
Like the Rustler and Snobs, what part one and two from Nax are great missions as well.
Snobs was great.
I would say keep Rowena in, and let's instead play the second mission of the original title.
You got a Host Went Home or Rowena's Curse?
No, I meant just perhaps we could focus on one fan mission. And since Seven Sisters is such a large mission, we could perhaps, if we have time, rather say a few things perhaps about shipping and receiving, which is the second mission in the original series of Thief 2.
No, we wanted to go for fan missions, so no cheating here.
Ooh,
I think Stoth is totally right, but maybe not the biggest mission she made.
Well, the Seven Sisters is just a work of art, as far as I'm concerned. That's just amazing.
It is.
You are totally right, but, you know, we have to play it, you know, and we are all busy persons.
Busy buddies.
Well, I bet just play the start of it, or get to a certain bit, or, you know, the first part.
So, yeah.
Supreme, you'll have to make the call.
Yeah, I would go for Home Sweet Home, but
that works
because it's like it's the biggest from the size of the game. It's like 107.7 megabyte. Seven Sisters 95.2, but so let's. You know what? Can't we make like a poll? In the forums?
Yeah, make a poll in the forums.
So are we...
But you know what? That gives us less time. You know, because I would start tomorrow, like, playing the game we just... I go for... Because, you know, when Seven Sisters is her masterpiece, and she just passed away, I think, you know, let's do this.
Yeah, I love it.
I'm sorry, Soth. I'm sorry, Nex, but, you know, like... Let's honor her legacy.
We can do that another time. You can do that further, you know, after you've done a few more podcasts, you know. Why not?
No, yeah. I think let's just go for that. I'm saying that now because you mentioned it. I think I'm totally with you. So let's play.
I think it's fitting. I think it's fitting because it's probably one of the first fan missions that a lot of the people played.
Right, because when you go to the forums and you get used to like, oh, fan missions, and yet, then you check like the threads where it's like, what are the best missions ever made? And then Seven Sisters is like mentioned everywhere, and you're like, everyone played that.
Yeah, and it used to be that the old, I don't know how it was called, but one of the fan mission sites that I visited when I started playing fan missions quite a few years ago had ranking on it. And I know that like yes. first five missions were like Ominous Bequest Gold, Seven Sisters, you know, and
don't give me orgasms.
I think that in that way it's fitting because
a classic one, right?
Definitely a classic.
So one thing, next time we already had to come to the next submission of the next podcast because the conversation just was like an inside view of how to deal with things. So it's Seven Sisters. If you don't want to get spoiled and haven't played this, do it. Otherwise, there's no excuse if we spoil you in the next episode. Soth, any last words from you?
I think the best thing that the creators of this game did for the game was release the mission editor because it's allowed the community to be what it is today. Without that, we wouldn't have it.
Right, that clever words, amazing. And I think this is like the end word for everything that's about Thief today. That's amazing. Thanks for that. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting everyone. Corsair for the logo. That's what I wanted to mention. Of course, without asking you, you did that. Thanks for that. And see or hear you next time. We are out.
Goodbye.
See you later.
Looks like the coast is clear for Basso now.